Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Good morning, listeners. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And it's Saturday, July 22nd, 2017. And once again, a wild week out there in the world. We're going to review those parts of it which you haven't heard on other media because, you know, they're just not with the program like on the Right Side. And we got a lot to cover. We got a lot to cover this morning. Anyway, I'm going to start you off with our story, of course. More on that in a moment. And thanks for all those great emails on my story last week about Mad Max of the Ranch. I'm still laughing about it. The truck driver from Hades. The hey truck driver from the Lord. I don't know what he thought he was. Anyway, you know, one of my listeners wrote in with a better kind of moral of the story than I actually used last week, and I want to thank Sally Dotson from Kansas. Great idea. And I'm going to give you the moral of the story. Those of you who have not heard last week's show, please listen to it. The first 20 minutes or so is my story for that day about Mad Max of the Ranch. And I didn't give you the half of it, trust me. It was too much. But her moral of the story was, when you see a red flag, run like hell from the flagpole. I really like that. Thank you, Sally. And I must say, you upped the host on your moral of the story. Anyway, our story this week, before I tell you about what's going to be on the show, I'll give you a little prelude. Our story this week is never put off today for tomorrow what should have been done yesterday. And it's the sad tale of pivot wows, woes, and other, should we say, assorted, unanticipated happenings. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You really can't. It's all going in the books, folks. It's all going in the books. Now, the other stuff we have to cover today, and there is a bunch of it. We're going to focus more on Common Core. I started that last week. This is the insidious program that Barack Obama put in through his Department of Education, which basically, without act of Congress, without the okay of parents, without the yes of local school boards, nationalized education to the great detriment of our children, and in my opinion, and I'm going to get into this today, the absolute erosion of our republic, our Constitution, and shall we say the deductive reasoning abilities of the people who are coming up through the education system now who will be running this country in 10 to 30 years, which, of course, is exactly what the progressives planned. You know, Cass Sunstein, who we're going to be talking about again. I've talked about him in many shows. Cass Sunstein has kind of resurfaced indirectly, the regulatory czar of Barack Obama. And he wrote a book, and in it he talked about how the left needs to nudge all their ideological points forward bit by bit until they cross the finish line. And we have seen that time and time and time again, from Obamacare to IRS meddling to increased taxes to redistribution and, of course, to education. So we're going to talk about that quite a bit. You should listen to last week's show if you kind of as a foundational lead-in to what I'm going to be talking about today, which is unbelievable. I mean, literally unbelievable. What your children are being subjected to in those states, which are unfortunately 42 of the 50 that have implemented Common Core. We're going to be talking a little bit about healthcare, which is a, it's a friggin' fiasco. That's what it is. And we're going to be talking, about just a couple of, I'm just going to delve into it just a bit. Susan Rice and the unmasking scandal. We're going to talk about the poor guy, the GOP operative who was to testify. He'd been trying to get the 33,000 emails that Hillary deleted, for which, you know, nothing's ever happened. Classified information, the whole nine yards. And he somehow committed suicide. You know, this is now the 51st death directly related to either close associates who knew too much of the Clintons, or people with whom the Clintons kind of brushed shoulders, who were about to testify against the Clintons in one thing or another. He was, the next day prior to his suicide, supposed to testify on illegal contributions, pay for play in the Clinton Foundation. There's no coincidences, folks. Oh, and by the way, he shot himself twice, in the back of the head. That's how he committed suicide. And he left a suicide note that said, I'm not kidding about this, part of it said, "This was not foul play." Okay. And then, of course, he took the gun and he reached all the way around behind his head and then shot himself twice through the brain. It's rather amazing. Ruled a suicide by the D.C. cops, who, of course, are appointed by Democratic politicians, who, of course, are linked at the hip in many different ways, including via money to the Clintons. And we're going to talk about some international stuff. We're going to talk about the energy wars, which are shaping up, because that is going to be the precipitator of some real wars, I'm afraid. And it's something that you need to understand in terms of a geopolitical sense, because it affects you, your pocketbook, and your family's, well, life and death. How's that? Can't get much more serious than that. And we're going to talk a little bit about India and China, because nobody's talking about that. They're on the verge of war. They both have hundreds of millions of expendable people, and it could be quite ugly. And we're going to talk about the trade wars, which are part of the oil and energy wars, which are now shaping up, and which you're going to see, mark my words, over the next 60 or 90 days, maybe sooner, you will see suddenly, even in the mainstream media, because they'll use it to blast Trump, and in the economic media, because it's really huge, you're going to see trade wars ramping up amongst all sorts of people, but primarily and precipitated by a huge trade war between China and the United States, which will be followed shortly thereafter by a real war between America and North Korea. But we will talk about that in a bit, and you will hear it here first. It's more of those dots that this poor old hayseed in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, has managed to connect. And unfortunately, those of you who have listened to my show for any extended period of time or since inception, I'm unfortunately pretty good at. I wish I wasn't. I wish I was wrong on a lot of this stuff. Trust me, I really do. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Trump's agenda and how the Democrats are successfully using his personality to invoke him to undermine his own agenda, and how that has to be kind of turned around, or his agenda is not going to get accomplished, which will exacerbate the trade wars, exacerbate, or should we say heighten, the likelihood of real wars, and undermine his agenda, and could have severe political impacts in 2018 and 2020, which of course is why the Democrats are doing it. Because the Democrats are driven by ideology, not by love of America or concern by the American people. I think that's pretty clear by now. So, we got a lot to go over. Without further ado, I'm going to give you my story of this show. Let me tell you a story. So, we have this pivot here on the ranch. And she's swinging round and round right now, dumping water out on what's looking to be a great second crop of alfalfa. And the pivot pretty much runs itself. It needs babying from time to time. We spent 2 days before gearing it up with our old 74 five-yard dump truck. I mean, it's a beast. You could put 50 cows on it and send it to Afghanistan. It would do great. But it's a great little truck, and my old saw of a ranch hand rigged kind of a chute system, which dumped the gravel kind of in a 6-inch, should we say, a 6-inch plume out the back of the truck rather than the full width of the truck so that we could fill the pivot ruts. And that's the tracks in which the pivot tires run. We have 7 towers on the pivot. So the outer pivot is probably a half mile long, I guess. And the inner pivot is probably, I don't know, 200 yards long. And, of course, all the pivot tracks in between are of varying lengths. As you get to the outside swing of the pivot, the longer. We went back and forth. There were 3 of us. And dumped gravel in those things, load after load after load after load. We're talking probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 tons of 3-inch aggregate. We didn't have enough to cover every inch, but we covered all the low spots because the pivot, if you don't, as the ground gets wet, the pivot tires tend to sink, and then the pivot drivers, which run along the tire base and the axles, get stuck in the mud. Then you have to go out with a bobcat, lift the pivot up, put gravel underneath it. It's a big wreck. And messy. Messy, 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 messy. So we did all that preemptive work. Pivot's been running fine, back and forth, and lots of water. And the alfalfa's looking greener than emerald, Irish emerald in the spring. And today, I noticed the pivot kind of sputtering. It would go on and off. And that's usually a telltale sign of stuff from the pond that feeds the siphon, that feeds the pivot. You know, algae and weeds and all sorts of stuff that runs around the pond despite our screens, getting into the tank, which feeds the pivot, and clogging up the screen, which is designed to, of course, keep the stuff out of the pivot system itself. So we run out there, and sure enough, it's clogged to beat the band, and we have a big old brush out there, kind of a big old an oversized fuller brush, 6-foot handle, big bristles on it, and basically there's a top to the pivot cistern, which is about 6 feet deep and 6 feet around, big metal thing, and you pull that top and then you brush off the screen, which occupies the center of the cistern, and off the pivot goes again. And the pivot, I brush it out in about 5 minutes. The pivot starts right back up. And then I noticed the pivot wasn't moving. So I decided to shut the pivot down. Because, you know, I mean, while we have the top off, we might as well do the deal right. Which means plugging off the line to the, shall we say, the pivot machinery. And brushing the hell out of the screen and the pivot cistern. And then running water from the pond through the cistern, so it won't go down into the pivot machinery, but instead it'll go out the pivot cistern down to the creek, and we have nice clean water without a bunch of old stuff floating around in it to clog the screen once again. It was a great idea. Well, you know, the first thing that happens is I bend down to take out, we'll call it the plug, at the bottom of the cistern to drain it, and something will whack hits me right above my sunglasses in the eye, and I realize I got stung by a bee. And I'm thinking to myself, well, where the hell did he come from? And, you know, I go back to the house, and there's a little swelling. I mean, it was no big deal, but it hurt like a banshee for about 5 minutes. And then we go back out there, and we find all sorts of bees swarming around the cistern, which we've now opened, which is now empty, with water running straight through it from the pond. And guess what? There was a beehive, kind of these miniature yellow jackets. might be some type of honeybee. I'm not really sure. They weren't, thank God, full-fledged yellow jackets that would have carried us into the trees and done who knows what with us. So we have this beehive. We're trying to get the pivot going again. We're running around swatting at bees. I mean, really, you should have a video of it. We probably could have gotten, you know, 10 million hits on it. We finally kind of get all that halfway under control after three trips back to the house looking for Raid and bug spray and all sorts of stuff. And we go down to clean out the mechanical portion of the pivot, which also has a series of screens at the intake and all that. I won't bore you with the machinery of the thing. We get that all cleaned out, and we're all ready to start the pivot back up again on this very hot day and give the alfalfa, which is reaching out to us saying, we're thirsty, water us, after not having water for, I think, since last night, about 10 hours. And the pivot won't start. Oh, yeah, you know, there's power to all three boxes, and you have to do it in a sequence. And we checked all the gadgets and levers and stuff in the pivot control box, and we turned it off and turned it on and did the sequence in reverse and forwards and the whole nine yards. And we got it going twice. And once it's going, once you hear the whine of the pump, which is going to pressurize the system, there's this black button on the third control box that you hit. And it normally goes click. You can hear the pressurization. Water starts to come out from the pivot. And within a few minutes, it's pressurized and you're rocking and rolling. In this case, you heard the click and everything shut down. That happened twice. So we spent about an hour and a half out there, non-electricians that we are, trying to figure this out to no avail. The moral of the story is, or actually the result of the story is that the pivot is still not running. I called my great pivot guy, Joel. He's like a pivot guru. And he's coming out Monday morning to get the thing going again because it's above my pay grade. Anytime you get power or electricity, it's above your humble cowboy's pay grade. So he's coming out Monday. And so the moral of this story was, or is, we had planned to do all this two or three days ago, which, of course, would have been during the week and not on a Friday. And we put it off until the pivot started to sputter, which we knew would eventually happen in any event because you have to clean the screen once a month, and we hadn't. And, of course, we ran into the unanticipated wrinkle of a beehive, of a beehive in the pivot, which cost us all sorts of time. And then we ran into the really unexpected wrinkle of not being able to get the pivot geared up again after the chore, which we should have done at the beginning of the week, was finally completed at the end of the week. The moral of the story, folks, is it's like a little microcosm of life, isn't it? Anything you put off will absolutely be compounded by the unknown exponentially, and will have dramatic results that are detrimental to your goals. So the moral is never put off yesterday what should have been done then till tomorrow, because tomorrow will never come. All right, let's get started with the show. So we have this poor guy. You know, the Clintons are really unbelievable. First of all, you have Seth Richards. I've talked about him. This is the poor DNRC staffer who is likely the one who fed WikiLeaks the leaked stuff from the DNRC, which they released during the election, who was found under very, very, very and increasingly suspicious circumstances dead from a supposed robbery, except he still had his wallet, his money, his credit cards, his watch, his ring, you name it. And you can listen, if you put in Seth Richards into the search bar, you can listen to those shows over the last 4 or 5 weeks. I'm going to continue to follow that. There are a couple of articles under Scandal, by the way, which have to do with the latest revelations on the Seth Richard mystery. Not mystery to me, but mystery to the mainstream media and the Washington, D.C. police, apparently. in the article section this week. In fact, there are a number of articles I'm going to refer to in this show that you really, really, really need to read. Really need to read. And we're going to talk a little bit about now, because it ties in with the loony, violent left. We're going to talk about the loony left, which is something I did not get to, as two of my listeners pointed out in emails, in my last show. And, you know, where do you begin? I mean, seriously, where do you begin with the loony left? There are so many examples of the left being off the rails, anti-America, anti-American values, anti-constitution, anti-individual rights, for the collective, which, by the way, ties right into Common Core, that you really don't know where to begin. So let me give you just a few. Seattle imposed a tax on guns, which was to lower crime. You know, if you got to pay like another $100, I don't know exactly what the tax was, every time you buy a firearm, there'll be less firearms purchased, and if you got less guns, there'll be less people hurt. You know, the usual left-wing mantra, the anti-gun mantra. The real mantra, of course, is we don't want you to have guns because that's your last line of defense against our taking your freedoms, which we are all about and have been trying to do for 40 years. But put that to the side. Well, after a year or two of this tax, number one, the revenues on gun sales have gone way down and they've collected less taxes than they have in the past before they had the tax. Imagine that. Gee, am I going to buy a pistol in Seattle and pay another $100 to the left wingers who run the city council? Or am I going to like drive maybe 100 miles when I go see Aunt Tilda and buy a pistol somewhere else where I don't pay the $100? This is not a hard thing to figure out, is it? But the best part was, because this was supposed to reduce crime, the murder rate in Seattle and the violent crime rate using firearms has almost doubled since imposition of this law. Now, I guess we can all agree that this is just a bad idea. Let me give you another one. This is also out of Oregon, you know, that the communist northwest of the United States. They just passed a law in the last week, can't make this up, and they are going to offer, at taxpayer expense, never mind what your religion is, never mind what your thoughts are, never mind what your feelings about abortion are, they're going to offer, at taxpayer expense, abortions for anyone and everyone who wants them, including illegal aliens. How does that make you feel? I guess you could argue that an illegal alien who doesn't have a baby doesn't have an anchor baby which serves you a bunch of welfare and food stamps, but, you know, that kind of begs the question, doesn't it? Let me give you another loony left over the last 2 weeks. And by the way, you can go to this week's and last week's, particularly these 2 weeks, and I've had my producers post a bunch of articles on loony left stuff under the heading, under our category, the loony left. And it's, you'll read some of these and you will shake your head and go, holy smokes, this is like a nightmare. I was going to say a fairy tale, but it's an awfully dark fairy tale. Definitely read those articles. You will, I don't know whether you'll cry or laugh, but you'll certainly be amused. Another loony left stuff. Let's see. I mean, there's like so many of them. I'm only going to cover a few because I could spend like 10 shows on this stuff. Oh, how about this? The Democrats block a vote. Listen to this. The Democrats block a vote that would make female genital mutilation a crime. Now, you ladies out there, you libs who listen to me, you know, you folks who are kind of left to center, who think I'm crazy, remember all the stuff that Hillary said, remember all the stuff that Wasserman Schultz said, remember all the stuff that Elizabeth Warren said, remember all that stuff about how Republicans hate women, and the Democrats are the party of women. Remember Linda Sarsour, the Sharia law and jihad advocate who ran the Women's March? Listen to my show, put it in the search bar. I believe it was the Dance of the Angry Vaginas. How she is an how 500,000 American women showed up to a march promoted by a believer in Sharia law, which makes women second-class citizens. And genital mutilation, by the way, is primarily practiced by those who believe in Allah. Because, under Sharia law, women are second-rate creatures who are to be denied the pleasure of sex. It's rather strictly regulated. In fact, in strict Sharia law countries, you can't go out of your house without a male member. If you're raped, you need 4 male witnesses to the rape, or you will be stoned to death for false accusation. You can look up in the archives and see the stories. And on and on and on. So, just to let you know, folks, you ladies out there, particularly you left-leaning ladies out there, your party of the women, the Democrats, you know, all those people who talk about sexists and misogynists and yada, 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 they don't think it's a bad thing if your genitals are mutilated. That's okay. So, make sure you vote for them again in 2018, because you're in good hands. No pun intended. Let's see. What do we have for another loony left thing? I mean, there's like a zillion of them. Well, you know about this poor kid over in England. This is also kind of an example of state-run healthcare, I might add, where the parents, without any public input whatsoever, in other words, they don't want any public money. They will pay for it themselves. Want to take their kid to the United States for experimental surgery. Now, all the doctors say the chances of this kid recovering and not dying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are like 1 in 1,000. But you know what? Where I come from, 1 in 1,000 is worth fighting for. So, yes, I've listened to all the, and I've read all sorts of articles on this because it ties right in with what's going on with healthcare here in the United States, where the Dems wanted to go, single-payer government control, and where the Republicans ought to get it going but seem incapable, which is choice by each individual patient. So this poor kid over in England, the left loonies over in England, the courts have decided that despite the fact that the parents will pay for it, and they are the parents, and there is experimental stuff here in the United States, you know, this place with a terrible health care. We're going to leave England with a national health care system and come to the United States that doesn't have a national health care system. That kind of tells you something, doesn't it? And the courts so far have not allowed them to do this. Now, it looks like they may, in the end, relent, since there's been a petition signed by, I believe, is it 380 or 480,000? I mean, close to 500,000 Brits, and sent to the government saying, you know, let Charlie, I think that's the kid's name, let Charlie go. You know, let the parents have a shot at trying to save this kid. You know, this is the state deciding the fate of your children. We're going to get more into that because that also ties in with Common Core. And, you know, as far as the other loony left stuff, read the articles. Because, really, I could spend the whole show. And each one of them will make you grin, then gag, then grin, then gag. If you read them, I think it'll be much more powerful and you can get the details, which we simply don't have time to cover today. But let me tell you, and they are, the articles that I post, I got to tell you, are just a sampling. They are a small fraction of the articles that make my eyes cross and make me scratch my head that I see every week in advance of these shows. It is absolutely, the left is unhinged. And I don't mean just about Trump. They are fully out of the closet They're anti-individual, anti-constitutional, collective, communist, identity politics, divisive, vicious natures on full display. It's really unbelievable. Read the articles. Do you remember Susan Rice and the unmasking? Do you remember Susan Rice? Let's see. Goes on the five Sunday shows, lies through her butt on Benghazi video. Goes on five Sunday shows, lies through her butt on Bergdahl, the scum deserter, saying he served with distinction and honor, and on and on and on. Then she gets kind of caught up in this unmasking thing. She goes on a Sunday show and says she doesn't know anything about it. Oh, lo and behold, here's some emails, and she did know about it. Oh, then she goes on a Sunday show and she goes, well, I knew about it, but, you know, it was minimal. Oh, more emails come out. Then she goes on a Sunday show and goes, well, maybe it wasn't minimal, but it was all legal. And I didn't ask for a lot of unmaskings, and, you know, it was really some other guy. Well, she also said at that time she would be happy to cooperate with a congressional investigation on that. And, you know, everything is rosy, and she's so transparent, and she's such a good American. And she and Barry Obama and Valerie didn't do anything wrong, and she's like an open book. Then we find out, and I reported on this about 3 weeks ago, that all the documents that had been subpoenaed by the Congressional Committee on her involvement and Barry and Valerie's involvement in unmasking, suddenly they were being donated to the Obama Library, which the state of Illinois, who is totally broke, is putting up $100 million to help build, and therefore unavailable for public scrutiny for 5 years. And this week we find out that after accepting the invitation of Congress to testify, she's decided that she's not going to testify. Once again, you can't make this up. I believe there's articles under the heading of treason down below, because that's what it is. In fact, to be more specific, she's not going to testify because she thinks it's a monkey trial. And it is purely based, hold on to your seats here, folks, on sexism and racism. I think she's a member of the same party that says okay to mutilate the genitals of women. I think I just talked about that. Anyway, moving right along. Because it's racist and it's sexist, she's decided not to testify before Congress. It, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that she's guilty of felonious behavior under the direct request of her boss, Barack Hussein Obama, and Valerie Jarrett, his Iranian-born Muslim henchwoman. No, it doesn't have anything to do with that. And then her publicist, if you will, issues a statement. This is after all this has happened. And everybody's like jumping up and down, although the Republicans, since they're spineless, when they jump up and down, they kind of bend over and kiss the floor. Quote, Ambassador Rice is cooperating with bipartisan Russia investigation committees as she said she would. This is from Aaron Pelton, her spokesperson and security advisor. Which brings us to Samantha Powers. Samantha Powers, for those of you who don't recognize the name, I've spoken about her in the past. You can put just type Samantha Powers in the search bar. She was Barry's appointment to the UN as the United States ambassador. And at the UN, she scuttled Israel on a number of important votes for the first time in American history. She sided with Russia, the real Russia collusion, on a number of matters. She failed to bring strict resolutions in the Security Council when Russia invaded Crimea. She failed to get anything done in Syria while 500,000 people died because of the policies of Xi, the aforementioned Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett, and Barry Obama, and that milquetoast, pathetic, sorry excuse of a Secretary of State, John Kerry, that we had. You know, 500,000 people die, whatever. Tens of thousands of women enslaved for sex by ISIS, you know, because of the acts and lack of acts of the party that's all about women. You know what I'm talking about. Well, Samantha Powers, it seems, is also involved in this unmasking deal. In fact, it looks like she was just as active, if not more active, in unmasking illegally, it's a felony, American names in all this stuff that was leading up to the inauguration after Trump got elected. And she, too, is the target of the Senate and congressional hearings. And she, too, like Susan Rice, vowed cooperation. And she, too, like Susan Rice, has suddenly donated documents to the Obama Library so that nobody can get their paws on them because the Republicans have no cojones, so they're not going to... I don't know what they're going to do. It's just unbelievable. And one thing I did learn this week, you know, your erstwhile host does not know everything, and sometimes I'm surprised by a little tidbit of knowledge, and I was shocked to hear that Samantha Powers' husband, I never knew this, is none other than Cass Sunstein, Obama's regulatory czar, the author of the book who talked about Nudge. Imagine that. So Samantha Powers is a true product, the wife of and wed to the bastion of ultra-left ideology. That should tell you about Samantha Powers and what she thinks, what she'll do, what she'll lie about, which is about everything, to achieve the end goal. Thank you, Saul Alinsky and Cass Sunstein. And if she has to nudge it along as her ultra-left, I mean, he's like left of Khrushchev, as her ultra-left husband would advocate, that's exactly what she'll do. And what they're hoping to do, she and Susan and the rest of the felonious clan, including Hillary, Barry, and Valerie, what they're hoping to do is to nudge this unmasking stuff right along until it goes away. It's kind of what they did with the IRS investigation. It's what they did with Fast and Furious. It's what they do. Keep your eyes on that ball. And if you have a chance, write your congressmen and senators and tell them to get after these people. Subpoena them. Get those documents that they're trying to hide in the Obama Library for the next 5 years. What is this deal? Is there any accountability for anyone whatsoever in D.C.? It makes me wretch. Okay. Now, since I'm in a retching mood, let's go to Common Core, which will make you gag and retch. Common Core, folks, is the plan of the left instituted under Barack Obama 20 years before the left had taken over the institutions of higher education, the colleges, all that stuff. I mean, look, you're seeing the product of it now in what's happening on campuses. This is not out of the blue. This is the result of 20 years, 30 years perhaps, of purposeful miseducation, of purposeful twisting of American ideals, of the intentional omission, distortion, and twisting of American history that's being fed to our young people by institutes of higher learning. Common Core is directed at the little kids. You know, you got to get, as they say in Cool Hand Luke, got to get their minds right so that the job can be finished when they get to college, which the left already controls. And in the end, these kids, trust me, if you want to dig into this, you Google it up. The left's long-term plan, they play long ball, is that all of us are going to die. All of us who believe in America, the Constitution, individual liberty, limitation on government, all those principles upon which this country was founded, upon which the founders signed their names to the Declaration of Independence, pledging their life, their property, and their sacred honor. It is the mission of the left to destroy those pillars, faith, family, and the Constitution. I've talked about it in the past. Type in those search words. You can listen to those shows. And the way they're going to do it, or one of the ways they're going to do it, is to, number one, make sure that conservative agendas cannot be enacted. This is the Russia Trump hoax, which unfortunately Donald Trump is falling for, to the detriment of his agenda, which is the plan of the left. I mean, the reason the left doesn't want a wall built, folks, is because it's permanent. It can't be undone by executive order by the next lefty president. It's there. And I can go right down the list. Common Core is the left's attempt to infiltrate and control, and I might say obliterate, the minds of your children. Now, if you are grandparents or you are parents, I hope you listen carefully. And please do check out the articles under Women and Family Safety last week and under Women, particularly. I have a lot of Common Core articles under Women this week and Family Safety this week, including some overt attempts by certain blue states to take control of certain aspects of your children's lives away from you, the parent. You can't make this up. Read the articles and the laws that are pending or passed for yourself. It's black and white. Common Core, I'm going to give you some amazing statistics. Under the last 6 years of Obama's centralization of education without due process, through Common Core in the Department of Education, which hopefully Betsy DeVos is rapidly dismantling. I'm going to give you some stats of what's happened to children's education. So, over 5 years, Common Core standards were implemented in almost every state. There were only 8 states that said no. Common Core has been called by people who know education, quote, state-sponsored child abuse, unquote. United States students, since the introduction of Common Core, are scoring so poorly on standardized tests compared to the rest of the world that we now are somewhere between 26 and 28. 26 and 28. There's only 180 or 190 countries in the world, folks. In terms of educational quality, educational outcome. That, by the way, is a rather rapid drop during the same aforementioned 5 or 6 year period from the top 10. There is a book which you might like to get. By the way, 46 states initially adopted the Common Core state standards, and one of these articles, this is by both of the articles, or two of the articles that I have posted, have a bunch of links within them. So you can read the article, and you can go to the link where it's talking about a specific something, and read in detail on that specific site. They're really excellent. I mean, if you read those two articles and click those links, you will know more about Common Core than most of the teachers and principals who have implemented Common Core. I really highly recommend. If you have grandchildren or children, I highly recommend you understand what's being done to their minds, their psyche, their emotional stability, and their ability to think for themselves and be successful in the future. Because the heart of Common Core, folks, is to breed the collective. It is to standardize the masses. Because you can't have winners and losers. Everybody has to be the same. Common Core, let me flip over here. There's a book. I don't often tout books on this show, but it's excellent. It's called The Education Invasion: How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. The author is Joy Pullman, Pullmann. It's fascinating. One of the major private proponents, funders, and movers and shakers behind Common Core is the Gates Foundation. You know, Bill Gates. That's right. Microsoft. Multi-billionaire. Quote, "The Gates Foundation promoted and continues to promote one extremely wealthy couple's uninformed, unsupported, and unsupportable ideas on education for other people's children while their own children are enrolled in a non-Common Core private school." Unquote. Yes. And it talks about how parents and teachers and local school boards and state legislatures are just now catching on as to how insidious this Common Core stuff is. And it talks about how to get your state legislature to get rid of Common Core in your school system and replace it with local control, which is the way it's supposed to be. You know, education is supposed to be about teaching basic fundamentals. You know, read, write, add, subtract, all that kind of stuff. Common Core, folks, and by the way, I have a really good friend. I asked her, who has a son in high school, and I asked her because they're on Common Core. Fortunately, he is he's an advanced enough thinker to see through all the crap, and he thinks right rather than left. But she went online to try and get me some examples of this Common Core curriculum, and lo and behold, it was gone. The school had removed it. This all happened in the last month. I wonder if it's because all of a sudden there's a hue and outcry by me and people like me over Common Core. No, it must be one of those coincidences. Anyway, I will get my grubby little Wyoming paws on some of that and post it and talk to you about it, because it will forever alter how you feel about public education in most locations, I guarantee you. So, let's talk about math. Just forget all the other stuff, arts, literature, history. We'll get into that in a minute. Let's talk about math. So, if you're like me and somebody said, how much is 32 minus 12, how would you figure that out? Would you put like 32 and then a minus sign with 12 and then subtract and come out with 20? Yeah, that's how you think you would do it. However, that, according to Common Core, is the old-fashioned way. Read this article and see the examples in it. The new way under Common Core is 32 minus 12 equals, and I can't even follow it, to be honest with you folks, and I'm not a dunce. 12 minus 3 equals 15. 15 plus 5 equals 20. 20 minus 10 equals 30. 30 plus 2 equals 32. Which brings you to 20 as the answer. I'm not making this up. Read the article. Let me give you another example. In this case, it was reviewed by a mechanical engineer. You know, not a dummy. And when you're an engineer, you kind of have to know all sorts of fancy math equations and all that kind of stuff. The question was, subtract 38, what is 325 minus 38? Common Core in this test required that the children, these were, I believe, 6th or 7th grade children, use what Common Core calls the counting up subtraction method. Number one, write the smaller number. Number two, count up to the nearest multiple of 10. Number three, keep counting by tens and 100s. Number four, then count up to the larger number. Their example, which I can't follow, is subtract 38 from 325 by counting up. Write the smaller number 38 and count up to 325. Circle each number that you count up. Then they have a bunch of columns. They have the number 2 circled, count up to the nearest 10. The number 60 circled, count up to the nearest 100. The number 200 circled, count up to the largest possible 100. And then 25 circled, count up to the largest number after the largest possible 100. I'm not kidding you on this. I'm not kidding you on this. By the way, this gentleman who has a degree in engineering wrote a commentary to his school after reviewing the count-up method. Quote, don't feel bad. This was to his son, Jack. Don't feel bad. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in electronics engineering, which included extensive study in differential equations and other higher math applications. Even I cannot explain the Common Core mathematics approach, nor get the answer correct. In the real world, simplification is valued over complication. Therefore, 427 minus 316 is 111. The answer is solved in 5 seconds. The process used is ridiculous and would result in termination if used professionally. Sincerely, frustrated parent. Does that give you an idea? Common Core, folks, is systematically dumbing down our young people, not just in math, but all across the board. The average U.S. college freshman who has been taught in elementary, junior, and senior high schools through the Common Core method, at least part of his educational background, now reads at the 7th grade level. College freshmen read at the 7th grade level after Common Core, whose reading lessons, by the way, are kind of like the math lessons. I talked about that last week. Listen to last week's show. The first step to get this done, folks, is to repeal Common Core. You need to get your state legislature. Number one, you need to get your local school board, county, whatever, however you're organized, wherever you listeners are in the 50 states and foreign countries. Obviously, the foreign countries aren't dealing with Common Core. They're dealing with their own set of crap from their own government. But you need to get your people organized. You need to beat down and extract and burn at the stake Common Core at the local level. You need to absolutely beseech and inundate your state legislatures with enough moral turpitude to reject it at the state level. And you need to take back control of your children's minds and future. Or their minds and future, folks, will belong to the leftist state. Make no mistake about this. It is not just the outcome. It is the planned outcome. There are no coincidences. Zero. None. I've often used it on this show. Adolf Hitler, when he came to power, and there was a bunch of people saying bad, 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 said, I don't care what you think because I have your children. Adolf Hitler, by the way, was the head of the National Socialist Democratic Party, the Nazi Party, which was left wing, not right wing. All right. Let me use one example in a state right next to Wyoming, and it's a red, red state, Idaho. lots of legislatures and citizens are pushing for a repeal of the Idaho Common Core standards, particularly in math and English. So far, the Idaho legislature, which is, I don't know, 90% Republican, has not thrown out Common Core. Now, my suggestion to you folks in Idaho and elsewhere, I use Idaho only as an example, is get on the wagon. Call your legislatures, write your legislatures, organize some parent stuff at the local level, go to the state capitol, get this done. The future of this country, the future of your family, and the future of your children depend on it. There was another great article on Common Core, which I posted here, by Matt Walsh. He did a super job, by the way, of footnoting all his information. There's probably, 30 links in his article. And you should, 12 bad teachers, tenure and unions, Washington Post, answer sheets, schools can hire teachers with no training. I can go on and on and on. It's excellent. Read it. And he talks about how Common Core, I quote, and he's talking about your children, devours their individuality and their creativity and annihilates the moral values their parents have instilled in them or tried to instill in them, if at all. He publishes a letter in this article he gets from a teacher. Dear Matt, F you from the bottom of my heart. You are a terrible person. I work in the evil public school system. Almost everyone I work with is wonderful, hardworking, and they love their students. Most teachers do an amazing job and are amazing people. The way you demonize teachers is despicable and hateful. You should be ashamed of yourself. You are the worst person I've ever come across on the internet. Woo-hoo! Gee, I bet she voted for Obama. Anyway, Matt explains he's not on to teachers. He talks about how there's bad teachers and there's good teachers, and how letting the bad teachers float actually diminishes the good teachers that exist. He happens to be exactly right. He talks about the fact that most people in most professions are not either amazing or wonderful. They're good. They try hard. But in each profession, amazing and wonderful is the cream of the crop. Teachers are no different. And he talks about how the problem is there's no filtration system, either in Common Core or in most public school systems because of the teachers' unions, to weed out the good from the bad. That's just part of his article. Okay. He's a big proponent, by the way, of homeschooling. And by the way, if you learn more about Common Core and you're unsuccessful in getting it removed from your school system, I think you will become a huge proponent of homeschooling too. And I know a lot of people around the country, some of whom are good friends, who have homeschooled their kids. And let me tell you, as a rule, those kids are heads and tails. It's not even close in terms of knowledge, well-rounded aptitude, intellectual curiosity, and understanding of history and American values than any of their counterparts in public schools. Any. And by the way, I went to a public school, so I know. Let me give you some facts and figures. And by the way, he has the articles to back all this stuff up. They are fascinating reading. You just click on the link. 60%, this is after Common Core, folks. This is after 30 years of left ideology controlling our educational system from the top, that is college, down, and after the last 6 years of Common Core introduction in elementary, junior, and high schools. 60% of American adults can't name the three branches of government. I want you to think about that for a moment. Executive, legislative, judicial. They can't name the three branches of government. This is kind of the basic precepts of the federal government in the founders' documents, the balance of power between the three branches. Let me give you another amazing, I call it amazing, I mean it's reprehensible statistic. 49% can't point to New York on a map. Unbelievable. A third, that's 33% of adults 18 to 29, listen to this, folks, can't tell you which country we fought during the Revolutionary War. 37% can't name the first book in the Bible. 47% can't say if Judaism predates Christianity. 73% can't tell you why our country fought the Civil War. Now, it's one of the reasons I write the Threads West series is to bring history back, to give it both good, bad, and ugly, the unadulterated view through a story, because stories are far more instructional than textbooks, particularly if they're Common Core textbooks. Because history, civics, the Constitution, the structure of our government, which is the precept, the foundation of our individual liberties, and the restriction on federal government power and largesse, is being eliminated from education. I mean, the percentage, the statistics I just gave you, if you can't get that from those statistics, I don't know what can. You know, those of you who watch various shows, I think Judge Jeanine does kind of a person on the street thing, Jesse Waters does, some of the other stations do. And, you know, you see these correspondents, these commentators. You see them ask questions of people in various settings, including at colleges. And they don't know who the vice president is. And they don't know who we beat in this, who lost the Civil War. And they don't know who, and it's true, they don't know who we fought in the Revolutionary War. And they don't know the date we declared independence. And I can go on and on. And you just sit there with your mouth open and go, this can't be true. Well, you know what? I just gave you the percentages. It's more than true. And it's because of the failing, the purposely failing, the design to fail educational system, the foundation of which, folks, is Common Core, along with the left's takeover of institutions of higher learning, which they've pretty much done. You know, Matt talks about a really interesting concept. I never thought about it before. He says that we have been so dumbed down as Americans now that we talk kind of like in texts and emails and stuff in hieroglyphics, with curly Q's and signs and abbreviations, you know, U, the letter U for U, R instead of A-R-E. And instead of expressing our emotions, we use emoticons, smiley, sad, whatever. And he had a sentence in his article which really struck me. It seems we have come full circle from the cave wall, you know, where people painted stuff, to the Facebook wall. That really struck me. Really did. Anyway, he has a whole section on what kids are being taught instead of history, literature, the arts, morals, creativity, deductive reasoning, all those things that you would think education would be kind of oriented to. If the goal was people who think for themselves can be creative and successful. Trust me, the goal is just the opposite. Here's what they've been being taught, in fact, and he has the links that go to every single story that will give you all the background to substantiate his claims. They're being taught to masturbate. They're being taught about transvestites. – They've been taught about contraception, by the way, beginning in the second grade in some schools. And they've been taught about sodomy and bestiality instead of American history, literature, and the arts. Common Core, folks, values, just like the left does, because Common Core is a product of the left. It's the instructional guideline of the left to mass produce the next generation of mindless proletariat. The left is a culture of moral confusion. It's a culture that opposes every value and priority religious parents, I don't care whether you're Christian or Jewish, it doesn't matter, would want to instill in their children. It is a culture, and Common Core is its educational foil that values conformity above everything else. Everybody gets a trophy. There's no winners, there's no losers. If you participate, you've done well. You've seen all the stuff. It all comes from Common Core. And I want you folks to understand something, you grandparents and you parents and you parents-to-be. I know there's a lot of millennials that listen to me. And thank you, you young people, for doing so. And pass it on, please. Pass the link of this radio show on to 10 folks. Do it. Not because I'm great, not because I want more listeners, although I would like more listeners, but because people need to hear the truth. And they need to hear the stuff that nobody else is telling them. Because everybody else is busy talking about Trump and Russia and the Russians are coming and whatever else, whatever other glittering coin, red herring crap they got going that particular day. I want you to understand the disadvantage that you're at, and maybe it will propel you, it will impel you to get rid of Common Core in your school system. So, you know, in most cases, both parents are working, and you're telling your kids, I really would like you to be like this. I'd like you to think like this. I want to give you this opportunity. I want you to use your own. I mean, you know how you feel as parents about your children and how you'd like them to turn out. Think of the disadvantage. Your child is spending 7 hours of his day, 5 days a week, 9 months a year, for 12 years in an environment, i.e. public school, Common Core, where everyone he meets, almost without exception, urges him to be and do and believe the exact opposite of what you want. No wonder such a small minority of the students coming out of junior high and high school and college are able to stand on their own 2 feet, think for themselves, make their own lives, reason deductively, and understand, enjoy, and defend American values. The young adult, the typical young adult in today's society, I mean, besides barely being able to read and write, seventh grade level, has given up on marriage. Most people in that age range don't believe in marriage, has no discernible skills whatsoever. By the way, he has links in his article to all this stuff. Has been an avid porn user since middle school. Spends 10 hours a day, average, 10 hours a day, playing video games, watching Netflix, scrolling through Snapchat or Tinder. These are the values being taught your children, folks. By the way, he argues that the system can't be fixed. And he points out, I happen to disagree with him. I think it can be fixed, but I think it can only be fixed by you. It can only be fixed by concerned parents, to-be parents and grandparents, raising holy hell locally at the school board and at the state legislature and getting Common Core canned forever. Taking back control of your child's mind and emotions and values. But one of the things he says is he doesn't think it can be saved because now this leftist system has turned out enough prodigy, if you will, that's an oxymoron, who don't believe in any of the stuff you and I believe in, and don't know any of the stuff you and I believe in, and don't even know who we fought in the Revolutionary War, for God's sakes. And they don't want to change the system. They're a product of the system. Who wants to change the system they're a product of? He has a good point, but I disagree with him on that. That's Common Core. I'm going to have more on that for you in the future because I've been kind of following this for a while. My kids are out of school. They turned out great. They think for themselves. One is an entrepreneur. The other is doing great in a job. I would call them successful American thinking. We don't agree on everything. My son happens to believe, climate change stuff, although not as adamantly as most of the left. But he is by all means not a person of the left. He is a person of the right. My daughter is a person of the right. And when I say right and left, I mean left is anti-American, right is American. So it's possible to get good results, but they are also, in their late 20s, 27 and 30 to be exact. So to be honest, they were kind of ahead of this Common Core stuff. They were not ahead of the college stuff, and they got inundated with leftist stuff, which they rejected in college, but they hadn't been preconditioned for when they went to college. Anyway, let's talk about international stuff. Because in addition to domestic stuff, which affects your lives, like the Trump agenda, which is what we're going to wrap up with, there's international stuff which is, I don't think it's being covered at all. And if it is being covered, it's being barely covered. And most of you have heard squat about it. And it's huge. Huge. For your pocketbook and your security and that of your family. And possibly for the security of the country. Not possibly, definitely. So, folks, the beginnings, World War III has begun. Now, I don't mean tanks and planes and all that kind of stuff. World War III is beginning with economic adversarial relationships. Part of that is the product of 30 years of horrible negotiations on the part of the United States. The United States going broke, which it is. And the fact that all these bad deals, including by Barry Obama over the last years, who hates the United States, or should we say hates the values of the United States, being unraveled. They got to be unraveled. You don't have a choice if you plan to exist as a country. And this goes back to populist nationalism. But what's the key ingredient in an economy? You can all raise your hands. Some of you are going to say it's jobs. Some of you are going to say it's materials. Some of you are going to say it's stores. Some of you are going to say it's sales. Some of you are going to say it's GDP. Folks, the single most critical element to any economy in the world is energy. Energy. Energy also happens to be, quite possibly, the single most important component to your family's health, safety, and welfare. Without energy, you can't heat your house. You can't cook your food. Nobody else can grow your food for you or deliver it to the Safeway or other supermarket that you're buying it at. Your pump won't run. City water won't come out of your taps. Natural gas can't be delivered. I can go on and on and on. The list is ad infinitum. And you know what? We're no different than every other country in the world. Energy is the lifeblood of life and commerce. There's several countries in the world who are almost entirely dependent on the sale of energy products to exist. Venezuela, Iran, Russia. And Donald Trump, in my opinion, because it's good for America, first, and secondly, because it is a headlock around the throats of our adversaries, and it is a helping hand to our allies, has unleashed the dogs of war in the energy industry. I can tell you out here in Wyoming, energy is ramping up. There's ads on the Casper Station for people for Halliburton and riggers and drill riggers and oil field maintenance people, you name it. The cleaning gals who are two sweet gals who once every 6 months I have cleaned the house. That's not to say it doesn't get cleaned in between, ladies, although not extensively. But they're terrific people. They were, for the last 2 years, I mean, really struggling for work. Now they're so busy, their eyes are popping out of their heads. So I can see all sorts of little indicators. And the first shipment of natural gas, LPN, was sent to Poland just a week ago. The very first shipment. Barry Obama stood in the way of exporting our energy supplies to other countries for all 8 years. He was an enemy of energy. He was an enemy of all energies, by the way, folks. He was not a proponent of solar energy. He was a proponent of the crony capitalism, which gave all his buddies lots of money for failed solar energy companies so he could get their campaign contributions and their votes. Don't believe me? In the search bar, type solar. In fact, type Solaron. Type solar energy. Type wind energy. Listen to my shows on that. Completely corrupt government-sponsored industries. Winners and losers chosen by the government in return for campaign contributions, pay to play. That's what it is. And that's not to say solar and wind don't have applications. They do. Along with nuclear and hydro and coal and everything. It's an everything sum game. And the more you use of this, that, and the other, the more you have to sell to Joe Blow and Mary, i.e. Poland, France, and Germany. And in doing so, you take away the markets that Putin and Iran and Venezuela, which is a communist wreck, have long exploited. And you take away their money, which means they can't put it into their military, which means they can't expand because you are taking the money out of their pocket they need to foist their expansionist policies on other countries. I mean, there's many, many, many effects. At the same time, you're allowing your allies, Germany and Poland and France and England, you're allowing them some degree of autonomy from the iron fist, in their case, of Russia. In 2015, in 2009, Vladdy baby cut natural gas exports to Europe by 60%. Literally, in a few hours, folks, from that announcement, the entire European continent was in energy crisis. In 2015, he threatened to cut 40% of Europe's natural gas imports. If Russia didn't receive advance payments from Ukraine and for certain other things, I won't bore you with the details. In other words, it was extortion. Now, if these countries don't need to buy their stuff from Russia or Iran or Venezuela in the future, that leverage of Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and others is removed. Our allies are now with us. And the threat of conflict is likely reduced. And the ability to capitalize conflict, because conflict costs money, is severely undermined in our adversaries. You kill a whole bunch of birds with one stone here. Trump talked about this when he made his speech several weeks ago in Warsaw, Poland. Quote, "We are committed to securing your access to alternate sources of energy so Poland and its neighbors are never again held hostage to a single supplier of energy." So, folks, the battle has begun on that front. And that battle will extend in many, many, many directions between India and China, between the United States and China, and Japan and the other Southeast Asian countries in the South China Sea. This is going to be a battle royal over the next 10 or 20 years for control and supply of the energy resources of the planet. And as many twists and turns it can take. One of the things, it will be an ingredient in what's going to erupt. You heard it here first, folks. And by the way, there's a great article by a guy by the name of Jim Rickards on it also. You should read that. I believe it's under international down below, or should be. This is going to be a facet of a trade war which you're going to see start between China and the United States. There's one reason that Trump kind of backed off on his harsh rhetoric about China being a currency manipulator and this and that and the other during the campaign. And that's because more than trade imbalances and problems with China, he wanted China to kind of neutralize North Korea. And when he met with President Xi, the two of them talked about that. The Chinese president said he would do what he could, but he needed some time. And Trump said in that meeting, I quote, "I'll give you 100 days, unquote. Of course, the press doesn't report all this. And do you know what last week was? It was the 100th day. Yes, sirree, Bob, the 100th day. Let me tell you something about trade wars. There was an act called Smoot-Hawley, S-M-O-O-T, Hawley, H-A-W-L-E-Y, tariffs. That was in the 1930s. It was a contributor, many feel, to the Great Depression. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't pretend to be a learned economic scholar. However, the tariffs were put into place, did exist, and there was a depression, although it had begun before the tariffs were placed. Whether it elongated it or accentuated it, I don't know. So that's 1930. There were more trade wars when Ronald Reagan got in. And Ronald Reagan used the trade wars to put several industries back on their feet and end the 1980-81-82 recession, which he inherited from Jimmy Carter, who had made bad deals. Gee, what a surprise. With other countries. But it was a period of intense economic turmoil. I think Trump knew up front, and his incredible cabinet knew maybe from the get-go, that China could not dissuade North Korea from their nuclear ambitions. North Korea is a separate entity run by a crazy man, and he doesn't care if his people starve, because he's not going to. He couldn't care less. He's interested in the glory of North Korea and therefore his personal glory and elevation to deity status with his brainwashed populace. And the Chinese, in many cases, don't want to and in some cases can't change, control, manipulate, or alter what Kim Baby does. If you're familiar with Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary for Trump, let me tell you what Jim Rickards calls him. Quote, I've met Ross on a number of occasions. He's one of the toughest and most seasoned negotiators in the world. He taught Donald Trump the art of the deal. Trump's nickname for Ross is Killer. Wilbur Ross will be one of the most formidable political adversaries the Chinese have ever encountered. Unquote. The bottom line is the United States, their worst fears have been confirmed because they are not easily duped like Clinton and Bush's and all those people and Obama who did nothing. They know China can't turn North Korea. They know North Korea is a huge threat to the United States, both directly and indirectly through its sale and share of knowledge and expertise and weaponry with Iran, who is a huge threat to the United States. At least Kim, as if you listen to my previous shows, at least Kim is smart enough. He may be crazy, but he's smart enough to want to live. The mullahs in Iran don't care. In fact, the way they see it, unless they die and there's an apocalypse, in which case they're martyrs and get all sorts of extra bennies when they get to Allah heaven, the 12th Imam does not come and Allah does not take over the world unless they create Armageddon. I mean, this is really a dangerous regime, country, and intellect. The trade war, folks, is going to start with steel. Mark my words, next 1 to 4 weeks, you're going to see monstrous penalties, tariffs, whatever you want to call them, slapped on Chinese steel, which is going to help, of course, all the steel workers in the Rust Belt states of the United States. It will also have adverse effects on other industries in the United States, but it's going to happen. You're going to see sanctions slapped down on Chinese banks, financial institutions, investors, you name it, who are involved in any way, shape, or form with North Korea. And the Chinese are going to retaliate. And the trade war will be on. Game on. And other countries are going to join into it. Russia and China, who have long been conspiring against the U.S. dollar, will inevitably in some way link up. Russia will take some type of retaliatory action for their energy markets being taken away by the new American imports to Europe. I mean, there's some really, really, really big and interesting stuff coming down the economic international highway. You need to keep your eyes on it because it really affects your pocketbook. It really affects your security and affects the stability of relations with many, many countries and therefore the possibility of war with many, many countries around the world. We don't have a choice. Let me make this clear. We either fade into the void, broke, with untapped resources and our enemies pulling the strings of all our allies, or we stand up and kind of try and take it all back. And we're standing up and taking it back. One of the results of this will be after this Chinese, and I have said this for a long time because we have no choice, not only because of North Korea, but because of North Korea's links with Iran. once this trade war is in full-fledged whatever between China, America, and whoever else is going to be in the ring, you will see America take out the North Korean military leadership and nuclear capabilities. I'm telling you, it's going to happen. And perhaps that will send a message to Iran. I doubt it. But I am 90% sure that we're going to take out North Korea. And if you look at a poll of Americans, I think it was Reuters or Pew, in the last week, 66% of Americans believe that the only way we will control the North Korean nuclear threat is military action. That doesn't mean everybody agrees with what Trump is doing. In fact, less than half do. But 66% agree military action is needed to get North Korean nukes under control. And there was a secret meeting just yesterday, Friday, just yesterday. Not publicized, not photographed, just the two of them, no leaks, between Mathis, and if you want to Google up what he said about North Korea over the last month or so, do so. Put in Mad Dog Mathis or General Mathis, North Korea. You can hear from the horse's mouth. And that secret meeting, unpublicized, unrecorded, you name it, between Trump and Mathis yesterday, I would bet you dollars to a donut has to do with North Korea. We shall see. We shall see. Now, there's an interesting thing going on in the economy. I told you a little bit last week about Amazon, the CIA, the links between the two, Amazon's takeover of Whole Foods. I mean, some really interesting stuff. And the demise of brick-and-mortar retailers. If you didn't listen to it, it's fascinating what's going on. And it's scary. I mean, when you have 6,300 retail stores close in the first 6 months, more than double what has happened in the same 6 months in any previous year, something's going on, folks. Now there's talk in Washington, though, just over the last week, of filing an antitrust action against Amazon because it's controlling too much. What was Amazon's reaction to this? kind of the middle finger to everybody. That was announced that it was being thought about and there were concerns and all this kind of stuff. And Amazon announces the next day that it made a deal with Sears Roebuck, one of the brick-and-mortar retailers who's failing, by the way, to start selling Sears' line of Kenmore appliances equipped with Amazon's Alexa voice technology. So, game on. That's something you didn't know, did you? Going to be some interesting stuff happening with Amazon and Mr. Bezos. The last thing I want to talk about is Trump's agenda. I only have, actually, I'm 2 minutes over here. See, they spam me to an hour and a half, and I can't even stay in that. Shame on me. The yakety, 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 yak, poor old rancher guy in Wyoming. Just can't keep his lips from flabbing and jabbing. So we'll make this quick. Look, the Trump agenda, folks, is stalled. Now, I'm a Trump fan. I'm a free market fan. I'm a Trump agenda fan. I'm a Republican platform with very few exceptions fan. So I'm not casting stones from an adversarial position, but I'm telling you his agenda is stalled. The gutless Republicans in both the House and Senate, and that's not all of them, but it's enough, unfortunately, who can't get Obamacare repealed and replaced, or repealed after 7 years, have thrown a monkey wrench into his agenda, because I disagree, by the way. I think taxes and infrastructure should have come first. But in Trump's minds, in his economic advisors' minds, they needed to do Obamacare first because it wiped out like a trillion in taxes that they could then turn around and let people have tax breaks on in other areas because health care didn't need it anymore. So his agenda is stalled, and it's also stalled because of Trump himself. I mean, it's not just the Republicans, the spineless portion of the Republicans in the Senate and Congress, although that's pretty huge. But, you know, Trump did an interview with the New York Times, which actually surprised the hell out of me, a few days ago. I think it was Thursday. Whatever. Wednesday or Thursday. And in that interview with the enemy, I mean, New York Times is no friend of Trump, or conservative values, or American history, or American, I mean, no friend. He blasts his Attorney General Sessions, who I happen to think is doing a fabulous job in a whole bunch of areas. I really like Jeff Sessions. He blasts Mueller, the special counsel, who, you know, he ain't Lily White. I mean, his stuff with Comey ain't Lily White. His hiring of Clinton staff members and staff attorneys and Clinton Foundation attorneys and all this stuff sure as hell isn't Lily White. He's not Lily White. His involvement in his supposed, purported, involvement in the Uranium One deal where Hillary blessed as Secretary of State 20% of the uranium of the United States being sold to Russian companies, who then contributed tens and tens of millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation, and suddenly started paying Bill Clinton $500,000 for two-hour speeches in Russia. Mueller's in there some way, shape, or form. I haven't gotten to the bottom of it yet. I'm still digging. So he ain't Lily White. But, you know, I don't care how big and tough and strong you are. And there's been many tweets and many things that Donald Trump has sent out that everybody's laughed at that I've said were brilliant. And they've turned out to be brilliant. But I'm having trouble finding where the brilliance in some of his statements in the New York Times article, where that brilliance shines. Attacking the special counsel who's investigating you is usually not helpful. If you want to get rid of the guy, you want to bounce his butt, you want to do something, you keep your mouth shut, you put your ducks in a row, and you do it. But, you know, it's kind of like a soldier on one side of a battle line. If you don't want the other guy to be shooting at you, you don't throw a round over his head. So, and in doing so, you know, Trump kind of picks at the scabs, if you will, of this Russia-Trump hoax crap. I mean, the reason Mueller is expanding his investigation, folks, is because there ain't nothing to the Trump-Russia deal. He wouldn't have to be turning over other stones if there was a bunch of crud under the Russia stone, right? It's just common sense. Anyway, there's a lot, you know, there's supposed to be another vote on Obamacare repeal next week. Now, I suppose by some wild stretch of the imagination it could pass as part of its provisions that they have 2 years to put in a replacement, and in the meantime they'd kind of prop up the markets and all that kind of stuff for Obamacare. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to pass or not. I doubt it. I mean, I hope it passes, but I doubt it. The Obamacare bill that failed was really, it's better than Obamacare. But, you know, that's like saying a little lump of coal is better than a big lump of coal. It really didn't do much. Even assuming that Price, with all the latitude he has to enact policies and regulations and such, was going to get everything enacted that he could. You know, it didn't have insurance across state lines. It did cover pre-existing conditions. and fairly. In other words, you were covered so long as you stayed insured, but if you dropped your insurance and then tried to come back in 2 years from now on a pre-existing condition you had before, you can't do that. Inexplicably, the Senate voted down the Cruz Amendment. I think it was called Patient Freedom Amendment, something like that, where policies could be offered by insurers that people wanted to buy. I mean, right now, and I've talked about this, type it in the search bar. You can listen to all my shows 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I mean, I was way ahead of this curve. So if you're a young man, you're 26, 27, 28, you can pay $2,000 a year penalty for not buying insurance, or you can buy insurance through Obamacare. And in your insurance package that you are mandated to have, you must buy this government put together package, is all sorts of stuff like prenatal care, abortion coverage, birth coverage, and a whole bunch of other stuff which, you know, a young male probably is never going to use. The same, by the way, is true for gals. And the same is true for older gals. If you're a 60-year-old gal, your Obamacare mandates you to have prenatal coverage. Somehow I just don't think you're going to be using it. So what Cruz's amendment, along with the senator from Utah, what Cruz's amendment said was, look, you insurance companies can offer policies that people want. In other words, that 28, 29-year-old male I was just talking about doesn't have to buy prenatal care, birth care, abortion coverage, all that stuff. He can buy a catastrophic package. Something bad happens to me, I'm covered. I mean, real-life stuff for him. Real-life stuff for the 60-year-old gal. Real-life stuff for the young gal. Policies that truly cover what their needs might be in the future, not what the needs of others are that they're getting charged for because of wealth redistribution. And inexplicably, the Senate voted it down. And inexplicably, Trump didn't talk about it beforehand, and neither did these Republicans. I mean, they're terrible on messaging. Just terrible. Anyway, my thoughts are, and by the way, thank you, producer. I forgot about that. And the CBO came out saying 22 million Americans would lose their coverage under the Republican plan, and all the Republicans ran for the hills. Because the Republicans didn't stand there and explain, guys, that's just one side of the equation. There's 22 million people who are going to lose coverage that they currently have under Obamacare, but more than that will be able to purchase for less money than under Obamacare, both to themselves and to other taxpayers, plans that work. They didn't bother to explain that. In other words, yes, the day the Obamacare thing goes down, 22 million people lose their coverage. I'm giving you an example here. It doesn't happen that way. But 2 years later, 30 million people are covered because they can buy insurance that they really need at affordable rates, which they can't do now. The CBO didn't score that. The Republicans didn't talk about it. It's just amazing. Good Lord. You know, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day. I don't listen to him often, but he had a brilliant analogy. He goes, if you want millennials to understand this healthcare thing, say, look, would you buy a CD and pay for 12 soundtracks if there was only one? Would you go to a movie and pay for all 6 movies that were showing when you could only watch one? I mean, he had several other analogies along those lines. And they make every bit of sense. That is exactly the way to sell this to the millennials. and to the younger people. You're not going to pay for the five movies you don't get to see. You won't go. You're not going to pay for the CD with one soundtrack that you want to hear and 11 you don't. And so on and so forth. Anyway, Trump's agenda is in trouble, folks. And that means that the populist, nationalist, conservative re-atomizing of government is also in jeopardy. Thanks to Democratic obstruction, and thanks to the Russian hoax, and thanks to Trump himself picking at that scab rather than forgetting about it and focusing on what he needs to get done. Because if the Republicans, while they control the House, Senate, and presidency, and one party controlling all three does not happen very often, folks, very infrequently, if they can't get something done on health care, and even more importantly, on infrastructure, on taxes, on certain other economic stuff they have going. 2018 and 2020 could be nasty. As much as the Democrats have made themselves hated with their loony left stuff, just a few of the thousands of examples I gave you today, and their Russia, 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 Russia is coming hysteria, which is absolutely a hoax. We're going to be following all this. Next week, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about AMAC versus AARP. AMAC is the constitutional folks. AARP are the Obama folks for you oldsters. You need to be with AMAC, which has about the same benefits as AARP, and not with AARP, and I will explain that to you next week. It's kind of fascinating. Once again, very few people know about it. And I'm also doing more research on the 10 states most likely to go broke. I've already covered Illinois in several of the last two shows. If you haven't listened to it, listen. Particularly if you're in Connecticut, New York, California, Delaware, and a few others. Because so goes Illinois, so are you going. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive, and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.